Like I said, yeah, I appreciated Jerry Barber. They were good. You know, the context, it seems to me here, is to show the Jews didn't have any trouble understanding this. This is an illustration of Pharaoh to Israel. Now, you'll notice in this Romans 9, it seems to me, that he is explaining why they have been rejected. Now, God wouldn't be fair to reject Pharaoh and not reject them under the same conditions. If you'll get to verse 19 again, it seems to me, thou wilt say unto me, that's the Jew. Now, Paul had already said that he wished he could be a curse for his brethren, my kinsmen in the flesh. Now, these people were cursed, and they didn't like that. And they were holding it against Paul. So he's showing them that God had to reject them. And the reason, if you want the final answer, is found over in the 10th chapter when it says in verse 16, it said, how beautiful, and in verse 15, are the feet of them to preach the gospel of peace. But the problem is, they have not all obeyed the gospel. So these Jews they didn't like it because they'd been condemned, but you might say to Christ and the gospel. This is the way I understand it. Now, all of this, now Paul had to get it straightened out right away, that you're not going to be saved because of your physical descendants. That he straightened that up right off. But then he used these illustrations. For instance, in verse 18, he had mercy on whom he will have mercy. But that, of course, would be, as you have explained, those that obey him. And also, as far as who was chosen, as you explained, he chose those. He didn't choose them according to whether they'd done good or bad. He had to choose someone. That's the bottom line. And he had a right to choose Jacob. But it was before he was born or done any good or bad. So they're not going to be able to use him as an illustration. Now, when he got through explaining concerning Pharaoh, I don't think they had any trouble understanding Pharaoh. They were glad enough for what Paul said about it. God rejected him, and he deserved to be rejected. What he was telling them, you deserve to be rejected on the same basis. Now notice verse 19. You will say to me, then to me, that is the Jew, why doth he yet find fault for God? For who hath resisted his will? Well, Pharaoh resisted, and Paul is saying, you are the one that resisted. Nay, but, O man, who art thou that repliest against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed him, and so on. And he goes through that. But then they would say, well, why did God put up with us all of these years if we're such bad people? And I won't be able to read all of that. But he says in verse 22, but what if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted for destruction? Now you can't complain, well, look, he should have just wiped us off the map. No, God is not that kind. He did it with much long suffering, and he said, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, or those that didn't reject him, and those that would obey, which he had before prepared for glory. Even us, whom he had called, and that's through the gospel, not to the Jews only, but also to the Gentiles. Now, all I think is saying, to make it as simple as possible, and maybe you can explain it differently, is the Pharaoh, it was just an illustration that God's not acting any different toward you than he did toward Pharaoh. And the reason Pharaoh was rejected is for the reasons you explained. But I think it has this Jewish context all the way through. You're lost. And they said, oh no, God chose us and used Abraham. And then he said, well, look. And then he went through that. So, and then he ended up in the 10th chapter and said, the reason you're lost, you haven't obeyed the gospel. You won't accept Jesus Christ. And he's not going to rewrite his will just because you're stubborn and rebellious. And if you go to Malachi, where he said concerning Esau, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. As you read on down through there, because they God said, I've rejected you because of your iniquity. And they said, oh no, we're going to rebuild these walls. He said, you build them and I'll throw them down. And they had become, God hated Esau because they were wicked. This was a thousand years or the better part since they had become a nation, and they'd become very wicked. And if you'll read that text, they were so wicked that when you come to the border, he said, this is the border of wickedness. And so God didn't hate them because it was Esau. He hated them because they were wicked. And he didn't love Israel because they were good or bad, because they were chosen for a special purpose before and so on. But anyhow, I think the context has to do with this Jewish problem of being lost, and you're not going to be able to beg off. And so that, you can comment on
that. Well, that wasn't a paid infomercial, but now I'll take all that, because I think that's exactly right. The problem in Romans 9, at the end of Romans 8, you expect the book to end, because man is justified and God has said this is how he shall live. But now there's another problem. The Jews were saying, but you can't trust him. He promised he would save us and he's reneged on his word. And so chapters 9, 10, and 11 are all answering this Jewish problem of whether or not you can trust God's promises. And as Jerry explained right there, God is saying, you're standing rejected because you acted like Pharaoh. You harden your heart, and you'll be rejected. If you fit yourselves to be a vessel unto honor, you will be honored. As he says in verse 24, even us whom he hath called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. As also said Osee and Isaiah and so on. So what he's saying is you can trust God's promises. The reason you stand rejected is because you didn't seek God's way, chapter 10, so on, like that. And then chapter 11, if you want to come back, that's fine. You're going to have to obey the gospel, just like these Gentiles. And so the problem here is, can you trust God's promises? And that's why, at the end of it all, chapter 11 ends up with the same doxology of praise that chapter 8 ends up with, because you get right back to the same point of where you were at the end of chapter 8. And then you have the practical section now.
Randy Tidmore.
Alan, would you, I'm not sure if I understood you right on verse 17 up there, where it says that even for this purpose have I raised you up. Do some people try to make that like caused him to be born and be grow up the way that he did? I've always taken that as he raised him up as to become the Pharaoh because of the type of person he was. That's just the way I've always taken that. Did you take it a different way, or would you?
Well, first of all, people argue what you said. In other words, he was born for this express purpose of God condemning him. The Calvinist position, and that's, of course, wrong. Basically, it's just saying Pharaoh came on the field of history for these two reasons. And God used him for these two reasons. That's all it's saying.
Appreciate your hard work. I understood your lesson. I don't always. Sometimes you're above my head. I understood your lesson. Appreciate it very much. Coming down to the simple people. Hey, regards to this word, predestined, have you ever sat back and thought, why did the Holy Spirit inspire Paul, Luke, to write it in these terms? Predestined. Create you for good works, which God's prepared in advance for you to do. Why is he put in those terms?
Well, because God caused that plan to be before creating man. Man had nothing to do with the development of the plan. The plan was developed before man was developed.
Well, I just thought, it'd be simpler if he just said it like we like to say it.
Well, maybe it would have.
But it wouldn't have given God as much glory.
That's right.
And that's why I feel like we are defensive when we come to this, maybe because the false doctrine's developed. But shouldn't we develop an offensive position where we take these and say, look, God's glorified in this. And, I mean, sure, this other, yeah, man's got, it's like we've emphasized what man has to do so long that it's hard to take the part that God did and say, you know, he's made it all possible. He's blessed us in all this.
Well, yes, in answer to your question, we should develop a positive ability to talk about this. This is a Bible doctrine as much as any other Bible doctrine, but it's one that's a little bit difficult, hard to understand, and we don't pursue it that much. But I think it's something important for us to understand because it reveals to us the sovereignty of God and the character of God, and that brings out the glory of God.
Ryan Burns.
Alan, in reference to verse 17 about I've raised you up, it says, speaking to Pharaoh, could it not be the position that the man held rather than the individual himself? Again, Pharaoh being the position as the president of Egypt.
I guess it could. I suspect in this particular case, God foreknew this man and used him for this illustration without impinging on his free will.
George, was your direct reference to Brian? Okay. James Orton.
Alan, what would be wrong with saying he raised up or caused to be born Pharaoh as an individual?
Nothing. Sometimes God's foreknowledge and predestination join hands. The problem you have to be careful with about that is to explain to people that you're not saying God overrode Pharaoh's free will. Based on his foreknowledge of Pharaoh's character, God raised him up for this purpose.
But that would be like Jeremiah, wouldn't it, in Jeremiah 1:5. Can I read that?
Sure.
Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee to be a prophet unto the nations.
Yes, the Apostle Paul, same thing, Galatians 1. That's a good point.
George Batty. In 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 10, David said, O Lord God of Israel, your servant has certainly heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant. And the Lord said, he will come down. Then David said, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will deliver you. So David and his men, about 600, arose and departed from Keilah and went wherever they could go. Then it was told Saul that David had escaped from Keilah, so he halted the expedition. I'd just like you to comment on God's foreknowledge that Saul would come and his predestination. How does this fit in with your subject? God said he will come and you will be delivered, and yet he didn't come and no one got delivered at all.
That's a good question, and I might have to have Richard answer this question. He explained this to me a few months ago. But I think what has happened here is, you know, I made the point earlier that in this matter of foreknowledge and the fact that God foreknows individuals, that does not interfere with man's free will, because it's not a matter of causation. It's simply a matter of God's knowledge in advance. The reason that doesn't interfere with our free will is because there's no causation, but secondly, because we do not know what God foreknows unless he reveals it. Now, in this particular instance, in 1 Samuel 23, David asked God a question that only God could know. Only God's foreknowledge could know this. And David says, if I stay here, is Saul going to come down here and get me? And God said, yeah, he's on his way. And he was. And David said, well, if I stay here and he comes, will these people turn me over to him? He said, yep, they will. And so David, knowing God's foreknowledge, then changed his plan and went elsewhere. And if we knew God's foreknowledge, we might do things differently. But I think it didn't interfere with David's free will in that instance. David just simply gained an insight into God's foreknowledge of what was going to happen if David stayed in that place. Now we have to realize, another point we can realize from this is, and I don't want people to misunderstand this, but if you think about it a minute before you have your knee-jerk reaction, a lot of the story in the Bible could have been written differently and come out the same if people had acted differently. For example, in the case of Israel coming out of Egypt, God said, I'm going to lead my people out on an outstretched arm. Now, if when Moses went to Pharaoh and he said, let my people go, Pharaoh said, okay, I give up. God said, I'll let them go. Take them. Go on. Now, the story would have been quite different in its writing. But the result would have been the same. Israel, the nation, would have come out of Egypt, because that's what God intended to start with. So, God's foreknowledge is so complete that he's able to take events, orchestrate events to result in his will, regardless of men's choices. And in that particular instance, David just asked God about what his foreknowledge was, and God told him. And of course, we don't have that luxury because we don't have miraculous direct answer to prayer like that. Does that answer your question?
Ready?
With respect, not rehashing 17, but with respect to the idea of him causing Pharaoh to be born for the purpose of, in a sense, to destroy him, and the way, at least in the way that it's used, and that happens today, what do we say? What I believe that, you know, for instance, in some factories they build test models to destroy, for the purpose of destroying them, to see how they stood up to things. And it's like some people believe that God made some people and they're the ones he's going to save, and then he made others and they're the ones that he's going to destroy. He had them to be born to destroy, be destroyed. But yet, at least today, God says, 1 Timothy 2 and 4, you'd have all men to be saved. And we are to make our calling and election sure. And as well as upscript and revelation, as many as will, whosoever will, let him come. So how is the argument then to explain this or to reject what they are saying with that, with what God clearly says, that he wants all men to be saved?
Well, in the first place, this does not say I raise thee up to destroy thee. This says, I raise thee up for two purposes. Number one, that I might show my power in thee. And number two, that my name might be declared throughout all the earth. Now, if Pharaoh had relented and done what Moses told him to do, exactly the same thing would have happened. God's glory would have been demonstrated in Pharaoh because he would have relented to the power of God. And number two, God's name would have been declared throughout all the earth. And the Philistines would have said, you better pay attention to those people over there, because you remember how Moses told Pharaoh so and so and so and so, and Pharaoh said, okay, and God's name would be glorified. So it doesn't say Pharaoh was raised up for the purpose of damning him. Now the result was that Pharaoh was hardened, and God hardens whom he will, but the people that he will harden, or wills to harden, are the people who reject God's will. And that's true of whether it's a Pharaoh or a Jew or somebody living today. And so this has no bearing on Pharaoh's free will. or on any man's free will. The principle is God is the one who decides to have mercy. God is the one who decides to harden. Man cannot say God has to harden us on this basis or that basis or the other basis or have mercy on this basis, that basis, or the other. That's all up to God. He decided that in the beginning. God is saying, when he says, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and on whom he wills, he hardens. He's saying, I'm running the show here, and these are the conditions. If you do this, this, and this, then I will have mercy on you. And if you don't, I will harden you. And Pharaoh is an example of someone who was hardened, but God didn't make him do what he did. So he wasn't. It's not correct to say he was raised up to be destroyed. He was raised up to show God's power and to glorify God's name throughout the earth, which he did. But by the same token, he did that by rejecting God, and therefore he was hardened. That's how I would answer that. And so God will have all men to be saved, but it's up to you. Got to accept God's will. You can't do it your way.
Jimmy Cutter?
Well, I was going to just help you out there a little bit with an illustration where that actually happened, and that was Nineveh. Same thing happened.
Yeah. Yeah, the first time Nineveh repented, second time they'd gone back and then they were destroyed.
Anyone else? Do you want to deal with those last two verses?
That'd take too long.
To do the fact that Alan's up.
I'll write it, though. It'll be quick.
he was just begging. So, why don't you talk about Simeon and Levi and the curse and how that turned around as a blessing?
You talk about that? You know it better than I do. I mean, we talked about it on the phone. I think you're right about it.
Well, in Genesis 49, when Jacob was handing out the last blessings to his children, he said beginning with verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers, their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter their council, let me not join their assembly, for they've killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger, so fierce and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. Well, of course, the reason that he said that was because of the situation where they vindicated their sister, Dinah, because of the man Shechem, I believe, had lain with her and then wanted to marry her. But Jacob, you know, everything that he says about these two peoples, it seems to be in a very negative sense. Yet when Israel came out of the land of Egypt and they were worshiping the golden calf, Moses came down from the mountain and he said, you know, who is on the Lord's side? It was the tribe of Levi that stepped across the line and said, we will do the Lord's will. And so 40 years later, when they came into the land of promise, what was said right here in Genesis 49 was fulfilled. That is, neither Simeon nor Levi had a part or an inheritance. They were scattered in Israel. But it turned out two different ways. Levi was blessed in that they were the priestly caste, and they were given cities throughout the entire nation. And they were treated pretty royally because the nation was going to support them. Simeon waited too long to choose their territory, ended up with a part of what Judah's territory was, and eventually the tribe was assimilated into the tribe of Judah and other tribes, and they had no territory, no part. And what Jacob had said was true, but Levi turns out to be blessed, and Simeon turns out to not have anything. And all of this goes with when we talked about God can fulfill his you know, will, his divine purpose, no matter what men choose to do. If Levi had chosen not to step across the line, that is the nation of Levi, or the tribe of Levi, that day and say, we will do the Lord's will, they would have ended up just like Simeon did in the land of Judah, or in the land of Israel.
Good point. Richard pointed that out to me on the phone a while back. He's the first person I heard preach on this subject 30 years ago. I called him up and asked him these questions. He said, why are you asking me this? I said, because you talked to me about this a long time ago.